The Honorable, the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Justice Kagan has the opinion of the court this morning in case 2321, Harrow versus Department of Defense.
This case began when the Department of Defense furloughed a longtime employee named Stuart Harrow for 6 days. Harrow challenged the furlough before the Merit Systems Protection Board, an agency that exists to resolve federal employment disputes. For various reasons, it took the board over 5 years to issue a decision. But at long last, the board denied Harrow's claim. It said the furlough was regrettable, but not unlawful. Under federal law, Harrow could appeal that decision to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. But there's a time limit for seeking appellate review. Harrow was supposed to have filed a notice of appeal within 60 days of the board's decision. He didn't. He missed the deadline by a couple of months. But he told the court that he had a pretty good excuse. During the more than 5 years he waited for a board decision, his work email address changed, and eventually his old address stopped forwarding to his new one. So when the board sent notice of its decision to the email address it had on file, which was the old one, Harrow never got the message. He learned about the decision only after the 60-day deadline had come and gone from a search he did of the board's website. The question in this case is, how strict is that 60-day deadline? Is it a hard and fast rule, or can a court excuse the rule for good reasons? The Federal Circuit thought it couldn't excuse the rule for any reason, no matter how good. The rule, the court said, was jurisdictional. That means a violation of the rule deprives a court of all power to hear a case. Today, we reject that view. Hundreds of rules governing the litigation process are written in absolute terms. They say things like, a person shall file in this court, shall file by this date, shall file these particular documents. But those rules are usually not as strict as they seem. When Congress enacts them, it does so against a long-standing principle that a court may excuse noncompliance for equitable reasons. So we generally treat even mandatory-sounding requirements as allowing equitable exceptions. That is almost always true for time limits. It's true that some rules, which we label jurisdictional, cannot be forgiven because they deprive a court of all power to hear a case. But we won't treat a court as jurisdictional unless Congress makes quite clear that it is. For that to happen, Congress has to speak in terms of a court's jurisdiction or a court's authority or a court's power. A simple time limit telling a litigant he has to file within a set, within a set number of days does not do that. And there is nothing special about this time limit, the one Harrow missed. It does not speak to the power of the court. It merely tells a litigant when he has to file. The government has a complicated argument to the contrary involving a cross-reference to a different law which does set out the Federal Circuit's jurisdiction. In the opinion, we explain why that argument is wrong. Suffice it to say here that there is a high bar to finding a procedural rule jurisdictional, and the government does not come close to clearing it. So the Federal Circuit has more authority than it thought to excuse Harrow's lateness, and that court should now address whether to do so. The opinion of the court is unanimous.
Justice Sotomayor has our opinion this morning, case 22-1218, Smith versus Spizzeri.
Stay means stay. For this and other reasons set forth in the opinion, the court unanimously reverses and remands for further proceedings. The decision of the court.
Justice Thomas has our opinion this morning in 22-448, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau versus Community Financial Services Association.
This case comes to us on a writ of certiorari to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The Constitution gives Congress control over the public fisc, and it requires that control be exercised in a specific manner. The Appropriations Clause provides that, quote, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law. For most federal agencies, Congress provides funding through annual appropriations laws. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau is different. Instead, Congress authorized the Bureau to draw from the Federal Reserve System the amount its director deems, quote, reasonably necessary to carry out the board's duties, subject to an inflation-adjusted cap. In this case, several trade associations representing payday lenders challenged regulations issued by the Bureau on the ground that the Bureau's funding mechanism violates the Appropriations Clause. The Court of Appeals agreed, holding that the Bureau's funding mechanism was not an appropriation made by law. In an opinion filed with the clerk today, we reverse. Under the Appropriations Clause, an appropriation authorizes expenditure from a specified source of public money for designated purposes. The Constitution's text, the history against which that text was enacted, and early congressional practice all support this conclusion. We hold that the Bureau's funding statute contains the requisite features of a valid appropriation. The statute authorizes the Bureau to draw public funds from a particular source, the combined earnings of the Federal Reserve System, in an amount not exceeding a cap. And the statute specifies the objects for which the Bureau can use those funds to pay the expenses of the Bureau in carrying out its duties and responsibilities. For these reasons and others set forth in our opinion, we reverse the judgment of the Fifth Circuit and remand for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. Justice Kagan has filed a concurring opinion in which Justices Sotomayor, Kavanaugh, and Barrett join. Justice Jackson has also filed a concurring opinion. Justice Alito has filed a dissenting opinion in which Justice Gorsuch joins.
Mr. Clerk, the court will entertain motions for admission to the bar.
The counselor to the Chief Justice.
Judge Dow.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Jose Dario Vasquez to the bar of the state of Florida. I am satisfied he possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted. Mr. Vasquez will be admitted.
Heather O'Brien.
Ms. O'Brien.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Carla Albite of the Bar of the State of Illinois. I am satisfied she possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted. Ms. Albite will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from Brigham Young University J. Reuben Clark Law School, presented by Eric Baxter.
Mr. Baxter.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys: Randall Stephen Heiler of the Bar of the State of California, John Lyle Gibbons Jr. of the Bar of the District of Columbia, and Commander Brian Andrew Whitaker of the Bar of the State of Utah. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from Liberty University School of Law alumni, presented by Rena Lindewaldson.
Ms. Lindewaldson.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys: Philip Ray Scott of the Colorado State Bar, Courtney Page Coburn of the District of Columbia Bar, Jeffrey M. Sumi from the Florida State Bar, Heather Aaron Fox, and Thomas Peter Morris from the North Carolina State Bar, Dennis Adam Burr from the South Carolina State Bar, Jonathan Minoru Tanaka of the Texas State Bar, and Tamika Nashe Casey, Joseph Anthony DeRazo, Randy Allen Hawley, Carlos A. Hutcherson, Lindsay Caroline Leonard, and Stephen Daniel McFadgen, Sr. from the Virginia State Bar. I'm satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the Sarasota County, Florida Bar Association, presented by Aaron Christie.
Ms. Christie?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys of the Bar of the State of Florida: J. Frank Castle, Corina Sue Kozer, Caitlin Nicole Craig, Adam Devin Dunn, Cheryl Ann Edwards, Lisa Kelly Gallagher, John Christopher Getty, Robert J. Hoffman, Matthew J. Matichik, Alan Lopez Perez, Cynthia Ann Riddell, Madeline Ann Salamone. I'm satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted and the applicants will be admitted. If all of the applicants will stand, the clerk will administer the oath. But before he does so, I would like to extend to each of you a warm welcome as a member of the bar of this court and an officer of the court.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear that as an attorney and as a counselor of this court, you will conduct yourself uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States, so help you God?
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Thursday, the 23rd of May at 10 o'clock.